Okay, it is September 26th, and we're in the Kinsley Library, and it's Joan Weaver and Rosetta Graff interviewing for the library, and today we're interviewing Jack Wolf. Jack, what is your full name?
Jack Wolf.
And where do you currently reside?
2 1/4 miles north of Lewis.
And when and where were you born?
Newton, Kansas.
What year? When's your birthday?
1916.
Remember the month and the day?
February the 1st.
Okay. What were the names of your parents?
Clyde D. Wolf, Alice M. Wolf.
What, do you know her maiden name?
Maiden name?
Yeah.
Matthews.
Matthews, okay. And so your grandparents, do you know the names of your grandparent Matthews?
G.L. Matthews.
And his wife?
Minnie Matthews.
And then the Wolf grandparents?
Robert A. Wolf. I believe her name was Jean Wolf.
Okay.
She's gone before I ever knew her.
Did you have any brothers or sisters in your home?
Seven.
Seven?
I was.
Okay. Boy, what, how many boys, how many girls?
Well, there's 3 boys, 4 girls.
And where were you in the lineup?
I'm number one.
You're the oldest.
Okay. Yep.
Of seven. And now you said you were born in Newton.
Yeah.
When did your family come to Edwards County, or how did you get here?
Well, my mother and dad were both born and raised in Edwards County. But after they got married, they decided they were going to go to Eastern Colorado and start a new home.
And then they came back, or did... Were,
no.
No?
They, you want all the moves that they made?
Well, I was just trying, so, but you ended up being born in Newton.
Yeah.
When did you come back here to Edwards County then?
Well, I suppose when they felt I was able to, my mother and I was able to leave the hospital.
Oh. Oh, I see.
I was born in a hospital at Newton.
Okay, you were just, she went there for her maternity to have the baby. I see.
And then my older sister was born there, too.
Okay. And so the family was already living on the farm here? Your mom,
well,
and dad?
Well, my mother and dad, I don't think, ever established a residence here.
Oh, okay.
Dad went out to Eastern Colorado and bought a quarter, I think it's quarter section of land, bare quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Built a barn, a nice little frame barn that still stands.
Wow.
And a two-room house, and of course the windmill, I suppose, was the first thing. Built fences, and the old granddad Matthews furnished some registered Hereford cattle. And Dad drove a team and wagon from Lewis to Flagler. And they started off from there.
About what year was that?
16.
Right, okay, right when you were born.
Well, they told me I was 3 months old when they moved me to Colorado.
And you moved in a wagon?
No.
No.
No, the team and wagon went out there so they'd have something to haul fence posts and lumber. And,
okay.
I wouldn't know when the wagon went out.
Okay. So is that where you grew up as a little boy?
I lived on this place until I was born in Newton, and my older sister was born in Newton. And the second sister was born in this two-room house. And then they decided they needed more house room. So we rented a home about a quarter of a mile south, had a larger house and more buildings, and we lived there for say 4 years. And then Dad bought a quarter section of land north of town, 3 miles. And
this is still in Colorado.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We used the same mailing address.
Mm-hmm. See, right.
The first building's height was 2 east, about a quarter north, and then the second residence was just about two miles east of Lewis. The third residence was 3 miles north, 1 mile east and 3 north, and we lived there till 1934. And then our...
Where did you go to school?
Flagler.
Flagler? Mm-hmm. Okay.
12 years to the same building.
How many students were in the building? About. Or
well,
in a class?
There was 24 of my starting class.
Okay.
Now, when we got to be freshmen, we had 30 because the outside schools come in for high school.
Okay.
There was 30. And when I graduated, we had 16.
Now, were you living in the country then, or when you
were
going to school?
1 mile east, okay. And three north.
Okay. And so then, you went into town for school?
Huh?
You went into town for school?
Oh, yeah. School bus picked me up.
Okay.
That is most of the time. There was 1 year or two, the Pages lived about a half a mile east of us, and they had 5 girls, and I don't know, anyway, Mr. Page hauled his girls and my brothers and sisters to school in the car.
That'd be a busload.
Well, he had an open touring Buick car.
Okay.
And then, I expect I was in high school when we bought, I think Mr. Hyde bought 3 school buses, and he had 3 sons that drove each bus, and one of his sons picked me up every morning and night, and, well, he got married, and his wife was my school teacher for 5 different years.
Hmm.
She was one of the grandest people I know. She's one of the people that really taught me what was right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And taught me to read as good as I can.
Right.
Right.
Now, those teachers are important.
And she lived to be 100 years old.
Really?
Yep.
Well, it looks like you're taking after her in that regard, too.
And her husband was a real horseman. And, well, after I got, I'll say 8 years old or something, Dad had cows, and he always had 4 workhorses, and he got me this saddle horse from the Hides. And I rode that horse for years and years.
What was its name?
Well, Dad called her, see, what did he go? Her real name was Beauty.
Beauty.
She was a tall, mm-hmm. blaze face.
So what were your chores on the farm growing up?
I went with Dad wherever he went. Mostly it was feeding.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, you know, had a Model T Ford, and he taught me to drive that thing through the gate while he opened the gate. I was 6 years old, and one long I was milking cows and feeding pigs and go to school, and a lot of times after we come home from school in the fall of the year, he'd have a team wagon harnessed up and we'd go and get a load of feed.
So you pretty much spent your time with your dad.
Well, yeah, and of course, any time he was farming, he had me under the steering wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Not at 6 years. And
6 years old?
9 years, he sent me to the field to go by myself. Crank her up and go. No starters, you had to crank it.
Mm-hmm.
You had a disc and drill, and you had one of the first combines in the country. And all of our family had something to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
Dad and I run the combine, and well, and after the girls got big enough, well, the girls drove a tractor. And
they drove tractor too.
I think all of them did. And well, when Charity, the oldest daughter, got big enough, she drove the tractor and I drove the pickup all the week. Them days, there wasn't any elevators. We had to put it in the bin, shovel it.
Mm-hmm. A lot of work.
Yeah. Of course, at that time, we had about a dozen milk cows, twice a day.
Now, did you sell the cream, or was it all for your use, or the pigs, or?
We separated the cream and sold the cream and fed the milk to the hogs.
Mm-hmm.
But we always kept ground grain around for the milk cows and the horses, and pigs got their grain soaked in that milk. Well, I mean, they'd go for it.
Happy pigs. Were you able to do any extracurricular activities at school, like sports or anything, or the farm was too busy?
Well, I wanted to, but Dad says I need you at home. Mm-hmm. Now, in my senior year, I rode a bicycle from 3 miles north and a mile east. I practiced basketball, but really I didn't make the first team. I lost out. I couldn't keep up with them.
Now,
I played second team.
You were born in 16, right?
Yep.
I remember right, so 26. You were still at home during part of the Depression, right?
I never left home until Uncle Sam called me into the trailer.
Okay, well, what was it like during the Depression and the Dirty 30s? And do you remember any of that?
Well, you know, 32 we had a pretty fair crop. And, well, you know, I think 33 was pretty good. Wheat was 25 cents a bushel. Corn was 10. Barley was 10. Hogs was 3 cents. Best cow was $20.
So on the farm, did you feel didn't feel the Depression very much, and there weren't the dust storms that were in Kansas?
Well, my folks, we butchered our own hogs, and Mom was great for raising chickens. We had chickens and pork, and Dad would generally buy a quarter of beef somewhere in the fall. We raised our own potatoes. He raised enough potatoes to last us a year.
Now, did you irrigate at all where you were?
No irrigation except the garden. Now, the garden, we had a windmill, and we watered the tomatoes and cabbage and carrots and watermelons and cantaloupe and squash and sweet corn.
They were pretty self-sufficient.
Mom canned everything. Rhubarb. That was our fruit.
Mm.
We had a fruit trees, but we raised rhubarb, and Mom canned up in rhubarb at least 100 quarts in the fall, and tomatoes. She'd have 100 quarts of tomatoes sitting up on the shelf in the cave. And
it was in a cave?
Yeah, you had to keep them from freezing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was down in a hole in the ground. Okay, we had a probably 6 foot deep and put some kind of a roof over it and then dirt up over the structure so it wouldn't freeze. In the fall we'd have potatoes, cabbage, carrots, beets. I don't know what all.
Did you have electricity, or remember when you got electricity?
Well, I think electricity come to the farm up there at Elizabeth. Yeah, I come down here. 48. I think they got electricity at Elizabeth in 47.
So she was doing all this canning and everything without electricity when you were young.
Well, sure. Had gas lights,
gas?
Kerosene lights.
Mm-hmm, kerosene. How about indoor water and plumbing? Did you have that?
Well, Dad dug a cesspool out there with a house, and we laid a line from the house to the cesspool, and we carried water to the house.
Okay.
That was one of my jobs, carry the water from the windmill to the house. And then the wastewater went down the cesspool.
Okay.
After we got established, now, when we moved there, there wasn't any.
All right, that's your outhouse.
And was over here at Lewis, where I came, there was just a little pump panel, a pump out that outside the house, mm-hmm. and no bath facilities. Or
and that was in 40 what, when you came to Lewis?
48.
48, and there still wasn't, okay.
And no electricity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, staying back in Colorado, what was Christmas like in your home? Did you celebrate Christmas? Did you get presents?
Oh, yeah. My mother, do you know Minnie Matthews?
I don't think so, but you? No.
She went to the Methodist Church here.
Here, okay.
And she was very religious. My mother was very religious. And, well, for Christmas, Mom and Dad get us a clothing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd get overalls and shirts and underwear, and the girls would get their dresses and what have you. Socks. Well, everybody wore socks them days.
Mm-hmm. Did you have stockings? Did you hang up a stocking or anything?
Oh, yeah.
What did you get in your stockings?
Took it off your leg and hung it up.
Did you get candy or nuts or fruit?
Oh, yeah.
Or that
yeah,
sort of
Dad
thing?
Was a good provider. After we got a big family, you know, at that time we lived 25 miles from Denver, and he'd go up there and you'd buy apples by the bushel and, you know, anything else we needed.
Mm-hmm.
But and honey, he always come home with a 5-gallon can of honey.
Honey. Well, that's a good sweetener, though.
And he could buy canned food in Denver cheaper than he could. He'd come home with a case of tomatoes and green beans and pork and beans and whatever, and fruit. Peaches and apricots, plums.
So you were a church-going family, and at that time you...
Well, Mom and the girls always went, but Dad didn't go to church.
Was that Methodist again, or huh? Was it a Methodist church, or...?
No, I went to Baptist church.
Baptist.
That was at Flagler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think my mother had something to do with establishing that church.
Well, is there anything else about your childhood you'd like to tell us? Any other memories, special memories that you have? Or
I got my first aircraft ride with Charles A. Lindbergh.
You are kidding me. Tell us about that.
Well, it was feed planting time. Dad was out in the field and planting feed for the cattle and horses in the fall. And, well, it was in the paper. Eddie Brooks was going to be in town.
Annie, was that? Huh? What was that name again?
Eddie Brooks. He was a barnstorm mm-hmm. pilot. Mm-hmm. And he was going to take rides off of Airport Hill there in Flagler. And Dad says, When I get done drilling, we're going to hitch these horses and go up and watch them boys fly. And, well, they were flying continually. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to ride. And long, little before sundown, Dad walked up to old Eddie Brooks and he says, you know, I was just a little fella, 7 years old or something. And I was small for my age. And he walked up to old Eddie and he says, would you give Dak and I a ride for one fare? Can't do it. So I walked over. There was two pilots and two planes. He walked over to the other guy, big old tall slim guy. And he got the resume. Dad says, would you take Jim and Jack and I for a ride? Get it, he says. I'll give you a ride. $5. We took us up around and over the city and back down. I maybe wasn't up over 5 minutes, I don't suppose. But after Charles A. Lindbergh flew the Atlantic, they came out in the paper, Charles A. Lindbergh was here.
You didn't know his name at the time.
Oh, no, we didn't know anything about him at all.
Isn't that something?
But after he flew the Atlantic, Dad loved aircraft.
Yeah.
And after he flew the Atlantic, you know, in the old Spirit of St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
he wrote a book of his trip across. Dad got that book somewhere, and my older sister was good at reading. We read that book, We, which was written by Charles A. Lindbergh. And Dad says, if he ever comes to Denver, we're going to go see him. And, well, he was watching the papers. Charles A. Lindbergh's going to be in Denver a certain day. And we went up to see him come in.
That's quite a story. That's great.
Had to rub his shoulders with him one other time.
Oh, really?
You know, I told you I was been overseas.
Mm-hmm.
We was on Bougainville, and it was really a hot place at that time. And Charles A. Lindbergh come out there to show them pilots that he could. They always wanted to reach out farther, but they didn't have fuel enough. Now he says, boys, after we get airborne, we're going to cut our fuel mixture back so we don't use as much fuel. Now if you get into a dogfight or a place where you need fuel, turn it on. But you can gain quite a bit more mileage by cutting his fuel back. He flew right along with the regular pilots on their regular air run. He was there several days when Bougainville died. I didn't get to see him. You see, he was out on the strip where the aircraft was before I was in the camp area where my tractors were located.
Okay, well, let's just back up then a little bit. You weren't drafted. You enlisted. Why did you enlist?
They sent me a draft notice.
Oh, you did? Oh, you got the draft notice, and then?
Well, in the meantime, I had an appendectomy.
Mm-hmm.
On the fourth day of December 1941, I was laying there in that hospital recovering from this surgery, and Franklin Roosevelt, the president, came on the air and said, we are at war. The Japs have hit Pearl Harbor. Well, then they give me 90 days to recover from this surgery. And I was either going to be drafted or join something. And, well, I didn't want to be in the Army. I tried to join the Navy with one of my neighbor boys. And they turned me down. You cannot see. They turned him, I don't know why they turned him down. And we went to Colorado Springs and tried the same deal. Can't see. Can't use you. You know what I mean? So, well, you know, the draft was right after we. Dad and I was in Denver, and we walked by that Marine recruiting station in Denver, and I walked in there, and I said, I've got to join something. And I didn't want to really be in the Army. Can you use me? They looked me over and says, you want to ship out tonight? No, I don't want to ship out tonight. I got cattle and horses I got to get rid of. But he says, you get rid of them cattle and horses and come in here. We'll ship you to San Diego. About 10 days I was in San Diego.
How old were you at this point?
How old?
Yeah.
26.
26. So you were...
No, it was to be 22, I guess. I think it's 26 when I got out. Let's see.
16.
40. Anyway, I joined in 42. 42.
26. 36. No, you would have been older than 22.
I was 26.
Yeah, you were. So you were on the upper end there of the age.
I was one of the oldest men in my outfit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Excepting some of the fellows who were standing on a lifetime, spending a lifetime in the service. Some of them guys had spent 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I was older than a lot of the officers.
So, and you were living still with your folks, but you had your own cattle and...
Well,
their sort of
partnership deal.
Partnership,
I spent my entire time with Dad and his farm.
And no girlfriends or anything at this point?
No.
No.
Too poor. Couldn't afford them.
So
no vehicles.
So when did you, let's see, when did you actually go in? What month?
Well, I think it was 26th of February, 1942.
And you went to San Diego on the train, or?
They put me on a train with six other men out of Denver, first class, had a sleeper.
Wow.
I got to see the ocean for the first time. See, the train went from, like Garden City and La Junta and on out to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And we run from Los Angeles down the coastline to San Diego.
Had you done much traveling before this?
Only traveling we ever did was come to, from Flagler to Kinsley and Lewis.
Mm-hmm. So this was all a wild world out there for you to see.
Well, you know, them days, there wasn't any major highways.
Mm-hmm.
It was all dirt or gravel except Finney County. Finney County had pavement through Finney County.
Was the train a lot of servicemen on it, besides you, from, or not, or was it?
Well, on my...
Wasn't like a troop train.
Well, various times we had different...
Well, I meant going out there, when you first went out.
Well, like I told you, it was on the Santa Fe Railroad,
mm-hmm.
first class.
Mm-hmm.
And there were six men
mm-hmm.
shipped out of Denver that night.
So then was there a boot camp type thing, or what was life like when you got out there?
Well, of course, they put us on, we landed at Los Angeles, and then they put us on a different train to mm-hmm. San Diego, and the Marine Corps bus was there to meet the train. And, well, they had a, what they called a 6 weeks boot camp, but they put us in barracks, and we were on the workforce to do whatever they needed, whether they wanted to pick up cigarette butts or unload trucks or whatever had to be done. And when you got on schedule, then the military training started. And of course, just as soon as you hit there, you got a
Oh.
Haircut? About like that. Didn't make any difference what you want, if that's what you got.
He's showing us a bald head right now.
But, everything was so different for me. Lived out in the sticks, didn't know what a serviceman looked like. Mm-hmm. But
what did you think of the ocean?
Oh, boy, it was water. And it was smooth.
Oh.
Well, depending on the weather conditions, that was weather, the ocean can get rough, but it was nice, smooth water when we, you're only looking maybe from 100 feet on out to where you can't see it. In them days, it was a little town just now and then between San Diego and Denver, and I guess now it's built up solid.
So how did they place you in the Marine Corps? How was it chosen that you would be? You said you were in the.
Well, everybody had to take that boot camp training.
Right.
6 weeks of it, and it taught you the march and all their commands were foreign to me. I didn't know what they was talking about, but. I was out there, I told you I was feeding hogs and carrying a big old bucket of stuff on each side, and the old drill instructor tapped me on the head, swing them arms, get in step. They treated me rough. just because I was dumb. But then, we got that 4 weeks of military training, and then they ship us to the rifle range. Mm-hmm. And we started out shooting 22 rifles with 22 ammunition and the old 45 Colts, bored out 22. I could shoot that and do good with it.
Had you done much shooting before the Army? Had you been a hunter at all? Or?
Well, out there in eastern Colorado, we had lots of jackrabbits and a lot of prairie dog towns. And, Dad was always a hunter. He had a 12-gauge automatic Remington shotgun, which I have now. Right where he built his new home. Was a prairie dog town, and I told you my mother was a chicken fan. Mm-hmm. He had a little shed out there that he had them baby chicks in, and them owls that stayed in the prairie dog town. Mm-hmm. Was flying up there getting mom's baby chickens. So the guy that actually, I told you he took a team and wagon to eastern Colorado. Mm-hmm. Had a motorcycle with a sidecar. Dad get his shotgun and they saw an old owl out there. They sat on the mounds with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd hit with that owl and that motorcycle and shoot him as he took off. Could hit him. But they cleaned up the owls so they wasn't getting mom's chickens.
But you didn't do the shooting, it was your father.
Oh, well, I was.
You were little.
At that time, I was less than a year old.
So your first real shooting was in the Marines?
No. I began shooting shotgun when I was 6 years old. Dad set up a tin can out there and I'd shoot full of holes. And, Gary's time, and I always went with him when he was hunting rabbits.
Okay.
Them rabbits were so thick that in 1934 was a real dry year like we got here now. And he planted summer fall of wheat, and it come up and look nice. And them jackrabbits warmed in there from see this old prairie around there, and they ate the tops off, and then they ate the roots. So he got to hunting them jackrabbits to thin them out a little bit. And they, after, you know, they got organized, and they established rabbit drives. Mm-hmm. Set up a pen somewhere and invite all, anybody that wanted to walk on this rabbit drive with their shotgun, drive the rabbits into that pen and kill them and send them to the packing house for fox feed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, after World War II, you couldn't buy any new equipment. It was all going for military. Mm-hmm. And Dad had an old Model T Ford, if you know what a Model mm-hmm. T Ford is. He gave $35 for it. And it was, well, a preacher's son had it. He was going to make a racer out of it. He cut the top half of the windshield off and took all the upholstery out and cut the back seat down and no fenders. And the dad gave $35 for it. Then he went to the junkyard. There's lots of them out there in the junkyard. He got fenders and a box to put on it. And we drove it around there. But during World War II, he couldn't get rubber. Mm-hmm. So it was set in the barn for till I come home. And he says, if you can find tires, you can have that old Model T. So, well, it had them high-pressure pincher tires on it, and they just wasn't available them days. I found that you could take the star car wheels off and put them on the Model T, and they were 450-21 tires that were demountable. So I got a pair of them 451-21 tires and put on the old Model T, and I drove it up there. During my military days, I saved my pay. I bought a war bond every month. It was a $25 war bond, cost you $18. I bought a bond every month. Well, of course, I didn't start right off, but after I got to drawing $21, I was buying a bond every month. And anyway, I saved enough money during my military days to buy a quarter section of land. And, you know, it was $35 an acre them days. Good level land. And
this was in Colorado?
Well, this was at Elizabeth after. Mm-hmm. The Dust Bowl ate us up, and the jackrabbits and so on, and I graduated from high school in 34, and I loafed around home there helping Dad, and well, it was a real dry year, and it was 36 this particular year. 34 was real bad, and 36 was bad. So one of the guys that, well, actually, he was going with my older sister. He'd got him a job up in North Platte River Bottom. And he says, if you want to go along, I'll get you a job. So, well, there was nothing going on there at home. And Dad didn't need me. And so I went up. Why, he got to driving around there where he was acquainted. Drove into an old farmer there, irrigated farmer, and he wouldn't have known, can you drive a team in the bundle wagon? Well, yeah, I grew up with it. So, well, the thrash machine ain't going to be here for a couple of days. Can you cut away corn? Well, four horses and a gold dig. Well, yeah, I've got many hours on that. So I cultivated corn till the thrash machine come. And then I drove that same team and wagon for a month up there in the irrigated country. They'd thrashed his bundles and they'd go to the herd. It was a sort of thrashed the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I drove that same team and wagon for 30 days. Thrash. You know what a thrash machine
mm-hmm.
is?
Yep.
Minneapolis Moline tractor and all the kids of it. I can't tell you the name of the separator anymore.
So that's what you were doing before the war.
Yes.
And then you got, joined.
Well, that was just one summer.
One summer, yeah. Then you enlisted and we had you out to San Diego. You've been to rifle school now. And then what happened after that, after rifle school?
They sent us back to the Marine base in San Diego. They set us out down out there on the parade ground and gave us a mass test. Anybody that got 70% or better on that mass test was automatically shipped to aviation branch. Happiest day of my life.
You got better than 70%, huh?
Well, any eighth grader should be able to handle it. It was one algebra problem. But any good eighth grader should handle it. I thought I got close to 100 degrees, 100% of it. Anyway, that...
So where was aviation school?
Well, you just crossed the bay.
It was in San... still there?
Where there was Army, Navy, Coast Guard, Marines, everything there. I got 30 days mess duty. We put me in what they call the spud locker, where they prepared potatoes, cabbage, lettuce, carrots, onions, strawberries. And then, well, then they, after we got done with that mess duty, they put us out in pup tents, you know, two-man tent, waiting for to be assigned to something. And, well, they'd come through that area every day asking for volunteers for this or that or something. And one day they come through and we need truck drivers. Well, I can drive a truck. So they fixed me up with two master sergeants and 10 trucks to drive from San Diego to Santa Barbara, California. They were establishing a new air base there on a civilian airport. A nice hangar and a good airstrip. And we stayed in that air hangar. And those old master sergeants marched us from the air base of a little town down there about a quarter of a mile. He walked us down there to dinner, supper, three times a day. But then, well, when the old cook come, one of them, he set up a mess hall in the hangar. And we slept an eight in there. And well, because I drove them, well, I didn't finish my story, but when they gave me a fire truck with another guy with me, and because I drove that fire truck to Santa Barbara, I automatically became the fireman. Well, I didn't like that, sitting around a fire truck waiting for something to happen. And I got to driving trucks around the base, and well, they kept getting in more men and more equipment and more planes, and Honey, here come a whole raft of tractors. And I told that old transportation officer, I'd like to have one of them tractors to take care of. Well, now, wait a minute, he says. Are you a tractor man? Well, I said, I'm an old farmer. I've been on the walk ever since I've been able to walk.
Wait just a sec, she's going to flip this over. Okay.
Well, now, he says, if you're a tractor man, you got them right now. Not one, but the whole front, please. Of course, I was using wheel tractors. These were all track-type tractors.
Mm-hmm. Now, wait, a track-type tractor, what's that?
You know what a Caterpillar
yes.
is?
Yes, okay. Mm-hmm.
That's a track-type tractor.
Okay.
I can't think of that other one. But anyway, there wasn't much to do there on the airport there. Santa Barbara is all oiled, and the contractors were building the barracks and so on and so on. But they did see the planes are flying around there, and the wind had drifted sand out on the runway, and this tractor had a dozer blade angle, so he could set it and crowd that sand off. So that's one of the first jobs I got.
But so how long were you there?
I was there from June till, you know, I don't know just exactly what day we shipped out, but it's probably after the first of January
and 42.
We went out to Hawaii and Islands, and we was there for...
Which island?
Oahu. Mm-hmm. See, the Marines had an air base clear up on top of Oahu. You could look over there 2 or 3 miles and see it raining every day. Up there where we had never rained.
Hmm.
But that was a nice place. But we got... Oh, there were some things to do with the tractor, and well, they had a bunch of old CBs that had been out down in the action, and they brought them back to Oahu to rest a while, and they were installing a pipeline from this Oahu, or Pearl Harbor, up to Marine Air Station Eva, a 6-inch gas line, and we had the tractors and equipment to do the machine work, so they had us, somebody else dug the ditch, but we had cranes that would pick that pipeline up and lay it in the ditch, and then they backfill the ditch after we got done. Now, we got to do that in the Hawaiian Islands, and then there was the colored fellows had a artillery group there, and we built some ground revetment for them to put their guns in.
Would you call those ground what?
Well, they had artillery pieces and 50 caliber machine guns. They'd build them down below the surface. Strafing aircraft mm-hmm. couldn't touch them. Mm-hmm. They had to have a direct hit from a bomb or something.
Okay, I understand.
We did some of that for the Army boys, color boys, the old colors.
They were segregated at that time.
Huh?
They were segregated at that time.
Oh, yeah. They were separate outfits. And
now, were they, those were Army? Those guys were Army?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we was all out there for what purpose? Mm-hmm. They were sort of Army, Air Corps, Navy, or what? We helped one another all we could.
And then did you go someplace else in the Pacific, or were you there the whole time?
We were there maybe 6 months, and then we went to the New Hebrides. Oh. and we put us on a old banana boat. We got our equipment up there, and it was made to haul railroad cars loaded with bananas. They grow them in from the land on it, but that's what they haul us to New Hebrides Islands on. And, well, they just run our equipment up there side of that old banana boat, and they had a crane on there to pick it up. It didn't make any difference what it was, trucks, tractors, or... But in the meantime, my commanding officer and I got a big TD-18 tractor, international tractor, the biggest they built. We run it up and, wait a minute, we can't pick that thing up. You got to tear that, put enough stuff off there to where we can pick her up. So we, and Lord, man, I didn't have any tools. And except, now I went, when I was at Santa Barbara, I told you I didn't have any tools, so I went downtown and I bought me a 6-inch, 8-inch, 10-inch, a 12-inch crescent, and a hammer, and a hacksaw, and a few things to work the pliers. And, well, we knew we was going overseas, the boys that I worked with, we each bought a carton of candy bars and some things that we liked, and that gas truck had a nice bin on the side that you could hang a padlock on. And when we got to Hawaiian Isles, why, they put us on a troop ship to go from the States to Hawaiian Isles, and well, when we got over to Oahu, why, we found whoever took them battery terminals off, he just did it any way they could. Broke them up, and several things to fix, and them tools and them candy bars, somebody broke the padlock off and took our stuff. So, but then to get back to my story there on that 18 deal, why, I had to take all apart, and I had to have some blocks to block it up. And I went around the Honolulu there to find something, and I saw a Navy truck sitting over there with a new 3/4 drive socket set, just what I needed. I looked all around, and I couldn't see nothing. Boy, they stole my tools. I'm going to get what I need. And I robbed that pocket set and went down there and took both track frames off. And that tractor had a 5-man seat on it and made to pull artillery pieces, a 6-inch gun or something. And big winch out in front. So we took off the winch and the tracks and the drawbar, and the old crane operator says, let's see what I can do with it. He picked it up the center of water. Well, then when I got to New Hebrides, I had to put all that stuff back together out on the bare ground. But the old transportation officer gave me one man. Now he says, you guys get busy on put that track together. Don't quit till you get done. It was 24 hours to get her.
And then what did you do there with...
Well, New Hebrides, it was a kind of a rest place for pilots. And people that were coming in and going on up north as time prevailed, or when they needed it, or when they had transportation. We was there, I don't know, 2-3 months, I suppose. And while we was there, it was hard land, and they got coral rock somewhere. I don't know where. I didn't go with the truckers. But anyway, our tractors loaded that coral rock on the trucks, and they put it over the road beds there. And, the Hebrides. When they, from there, they put us on LSTs. And then we went up to the Russell Isles. We was there for, I don't know, a month or two. Then they loaded us up on them LSTs and took us to Bougainville. Now that's where we really saw the action. The old Jap aircraft was over there with Ida teasing us. The U.S. had control, pretty much control of the air, but they'd come over there at night and scare the heck out of us and drop some bombs around. We just moved in there when we were landed on Bougainville. I told you they put us on LSTs. And, you know, they just let the front end of the ship run out on the beach and drop the sheet door down. And the last thing on was a bulldozer. So you could push the sand or dirt or whatever, make it so you could drive off with the rest of the stuff. At that point, they'd send half the squadron one week, and then anyway, they didn't want to send the whole squadron off in case something happened, they'd lose it. So they'd always left me bring up the last echelon. Anyway, when we pulled up there to the coast, the Bougainville, the tops of the trees was all shot off. And, Lord, man, I didn't know where we was going. But they said, you stay here at this LST and see that everything gets off. If you ain't got it off by sundown, we take it back to sea. So that was my job there. I had to see it. We got that LST unloaded by sundown. And then they left my old gas truck there. He said, you can drive this. Camp. Just follow the trail. I'd never been there, you know, but just follow the trail. And after a few miles, I come up to the old Marine Air Group 24, saw it. And well, you know, I told you they sent us up there in first and second echelon. And when I got up to that, well, the first group was, the old commanding officer come to me and he said, Jack, there's two or three of these tractors down, or something wrong with them. Can you get them fixed up? I said, sir, I don't have any tools. Well, no. He says, you make up a list that you want, and if the quartermaster's got them, you'll get them. So I went to the quartermaster with that list, and they just shelled right out to me. So we got them old tractors back into operation. But they need them, you know, to tear down the jungle and put up our tents and mess hall. We just moved into the dense jungle. The officers and men all eat. Got their mess gear out and eat it in the same area. Set out on the ground or stump or wherever you can find something to set out. So we got, see, we had carpenters and welders and all kind of transportation people, ordnance people, magneto men, carburetor men, metalsmiths, plumbers, parachute men. You had a good specialist about everything you could think of. Painters.
Now, were you there? How long did you stay there?
Bougainville. Mm-hmm. We ate Christmas dinner on Bougainville. They got turkey going.
Got turkey.
The next Christmas, We pulled under the gate, Gold Gate Bridge, and were shipped back to San Diego.
And that was, that 43 or 4?
5.
45.
45.
45. Right.
Maybe, no, let's see. I guess that'd have to be 44. 44, yeah.
So you spent 2 years in the Pacific?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Are there any other memories you want to tell us about that? Anything that, that happened?
Yeah. You know, we were the United States Marine Air Corps. They had 6 square miles on Bougainville. That's all we held. And just surrounded by Japanese. And after we were there a while, they got to dropping shells from, they were just up here on the mountainside, maybe a mile or two up. And, well, they was dropping shells in our camp area in the mornings when we eating breakfast. They got me several at the mess hall several times. And I had to run like heck to get to their foxhole. Mm-hmm. And but anyway, when they dropped one of them old shells and hit a master sergeant's tent where they all the master sergeants was stand. Because they'd been watching them Japs, just trying to figure out what they was doing or what they was going to do. And after they did that, they called the U.S. Navy up there with their old battle wagons, and they shot shells right up over our head to see the tracers up there just above our heads on that mountainside. The next, I expect that went on 3 or 4 hours. The next day, our own bombers spent all day dropping, bombing that
mountainside.
You could see them take off, see them go into their dive, all dive bombers, hit their target, see the bombs fall, hear them go off. Next day they come down to the old cat shop, take the dozers up and bury the dead. No, if I didn't want to go, well, I said, why don't we let the regular drivers go? They, I'd rather have them do it. Is, why pull them off their job when they got a job they like and want? That's another thing that happened. Anybody in my crew volunteered. I had to kind of okay and help him get there. They let the boys try to do what they wanted to do or could do or liked. So all the tractor drivers I had were fellows that wanted to eat the dirt and ride them old rough tractors. You know, they're dirty suckers and rough riding. Put out there in the jungles where it's about as tough as you can make it.
What do you think about this time that you spent in the Pacific? How do you feel about it, or how did it affect your life?
Well, I told you, I was some of the best men in the world, highly specialized. It didn't make any difference what come up. You had somebody around there that was qualified to handle it. I'd rather got my 4 years in the United States Marine Corps as a college education. You learn to work with men. I was in the middle. You were working with your the privates and corporals and so on, and the officers above. You had to get along with all of them. You learn to work with humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a good experience, like I say. Anything that happened to you, somebody in that ought to fit, but is qualified to work over. If he didn't, he'd call in a meeting and let's figure out what we got to do. It was rough. We had earthquakes about every day.
Oh, really?
We had an active volcano on Bougainville out there. I don't suppose it's 5 miles away. Like we had earthquakes there, and one of them was very, very severe. We hadn't got up yet in the morning. The sun was up. Why, that old bunk bothered. I didn't know how I was going to stay on that bunk. And I was parked right where my tractors rolled, that old big TD-18 and gas truck and various other things. Well, that old big tractor rolled back and forth on the ground, and that old gas truck was a-bouncing like it's running over Lister Grady. There's a big old tree out there, a limb that big around, broke off, fell right down close to us, and that was where we lost our manpower, was through accidental.
Mm-hmm.
One night it come up a big windstorm and blew a great big tree. It was big, from 4 or 6 or 8 foot in diameter. And out there is just soil on top of about a foot or so, and all the tree roots come out and went this. There wasn't any taproots on them. Well, that tree fell right down a tent row and killed 4 men and got my big tractor driver, broke his back. And he was in the hospital till we got ready to go home. And they said, "Now, if you can find somebody to take care of you, we'll let you go home." He was in a body cast. And well, I said, "Well, I ain't got nothing to do. I'll see you done be a good job. I'll see you get home." So I did his washing and we had to move, I had to carry his baggage and help him whatever he needed.
Now, was the war over when you came home?
No.
No.
No. We come home 44, and well, they didn't give us a chance to, you can stay on the West Coast or you can volunteer to go to the East Coast. Well, I'd never been to the East Coast, so I said, "I want to go to the East Coast." And one of the old best boys that I worked with all them years, he chose the East Coast. So we were together 3 years. And a lot of the other men, we were together 3 years. You get to know one another pretty good, what his qualifications are and what kind of a man you are. And a lot of them were the best men in the world.
And where were you stationed in the East?
Well, Cherry Point was our base. Cherry Point, North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Marine Air Base. Main Air Base on the East Coast. But they, you know, there was just aircraft there by the hundreds, and they had little outlying fields. So they shipped me and my old war buddy out to an outlying field for we from January to the war ended in September or something, didn't it?
I'm trying to remember. We've been a while since we've
been. Anyway, when the war ended, why they began to dismantle anybody that was signed up as a reserve and had the points got to go home immediately. And my old war buddy was a reserve, and I signed as a regular 4 years. But anyway, they moved us back to Cherry Point then, and they dismantled one outfit, and then they transferred me to somewhere else. Of course, they asked me now, I just had about 4 or 5 months to curve after the war. And I said, are you going to go back overseas or are you going to go home? And I said, I'm going home. So then they just kept me there until my time expired.
And then when you came home, did you go back to Colorado?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So what made you come to Edwards County then?
Well, I told you I bought a quarter section of land when I come home from the war. And Dad had just bought a brand new tractor before I went to the war. But he said, I just don't feel like we got enough tractor to farm the land we got to farm. And I heard that, did you know Harry Wool? Remember Harry Wool at Lewis?
I'm new in the country. I've only been here 20 years.
Well, that is, now we're talking about 60 years. Anyway, he was retirement age, you know, and decided he was going to quit farming.
Now, he was what relations to you?
My uncle.
Your uncle.
And, well, I have a younger brother that went south with one of his brothers. They wanted to follow the harvest. And they went down into Texas and Oklahoma, and then they stopped at Uncle Harry's to see if they could get on his crew. And when they found out that he was talking about quitting and selling his equipment. So when he told me that, my brother told me that, I immediately got on the telephone and called Uncle Harry to see if he still had his tractor. Yeah. Would you hold it till I get down to see it? Yeah. So well, your Dad and I come down to look at it, and well, it was a nice looking tractor, and I decided to buy it. Well, Dad was like, oh, you got a tractor, how about using it right here? He wanted to rent me a bunch of his land, which he did. So I bought the tractor, but I used it here. So I sold out in Colorado.
And when did you meet your wife then? How'd that get started?
Well, 1949, we got electricity over Lewis. And, well, I was going down to look longer. There was now and then the parks. And, well, I saw a sign up on the wall, Square Dance up Modern Woodland Hall, and because I'd been a going there other times, I was a little bit acquainted there. Anyway, we were square dancing, and well, there's a pretty looking girl over there. I'm gonna hit her up. I took her home. That square dance. And about every week we square dance somewhere. And just, I got to know her folks.
Where did you get married?
Here in Kinsley.
At the Methodist or?
No, what is this across the street here?
We got Methodist, Episcopal, Christian.
Christian church. She knew the Christian minister, so she wanted to know if it was all right with me. Well, sure, I don't care. I'm not acquainted. So we were married over here to Christian church, or the parsonage.
Just the parsonage.
My aunt and her daughter was the only ones present.
Did you have any kind of a honeymoon?
Well, I had to money in my pocket to go to Wichita for honeymoon. In the meantime, her brother died out in Washington, D.C. And, well, her folks didn't want me to go with her, unmarried, and so we stayed home with her brother. I told you about Gerald Schuss, her brother, her brother, and a brother-in-law went to the funeral on the same day that we were married.
Oh. Well, that's sort of a good day and a sad day.
Well, of course, I never met the mm-hmm. brother that died. I met all the rest of the family. That one, I hadn't been in the family long enough to learn him.